Greetings, everybody. Welcome back to the Morning Lineup podcast for Friday, February 2nd. I'm Anthony Castrovince. I'm joined by fellow MLB.com columnist Richard Justice. Richard, it's Groundhog Day, sir. Have you seen your shadow this morning?
It's Groundhog Day, and Eric Hosmer knows there's going to be six more weeks of free agent blues.
Yeah, I mean, this is the perfect winner for the Groundhog Day theme, right? Every day for the, you know, the movie theme, where every day has pretty much been the same. There's been the occasional uptick in interest, you know, the Brewers last Thursday with Christian Yelich and Lorenzo Cain, but those have been very few and far between, unfortunately.
Yeah, and you know, if we're going to go back when this is over and we're going to say, okay, there was no market for Eric Hosmer. Well, if the market was 7 years and he wants eight, I'm not sympathetic to him. And if the market for JD Martinez is 5 years, 125, and he wants 7 years, 200, I don't think that counts as a free agent freeze. But I'll tell you this, this offseason is going to have a ripple effect into next year, because when you look at next year's free agent market, there are two young guys in that class, Machado and Harper, I think will both be 26. But all the others, including Kershaw, will have celebrated their 30th birthday. And if I'm one of those guys, I'm going to my agent and say, hey, why don't we call the team and see if they want to do a deal today? And because money now might be more money than money later. And I think of that, especially in Houston, when Altuve has two embarrassing years left on his contract. Yeah. He's so underpaid. And I would think it would be in the club's best interest to say, let's just not go through this. Let's do that Sal Perez deal. We want you for five more years, or, you know, for whatever the number is, 6 years, while you're 26, 27 years old. But this is a free agent market that could change the way we look at free agency. And ultimately, you know, and the players can talk about, we got to change the collective bargaining agreement. Well, sure, but that's a way down the road. If you want to raise the minimum salary or change arbitration or any of those things, that's not going to help basically any player right now.
Well, and you hit on it with the collective bargaining agreement is what leads to this winter. And, you know, there were people when that deal was announced that kind of forecast this kind of situation, this kind of free agency. I don't know, maybe not to this extreme, but I don't know if you saw, Richard, Brandon Moss had some comments in the last couple of days that were really interesting. Moss was, of course, just traded from the Royals to the A's, but he was just saying that, you know, actually his actual quote was, everybody wants to look up and scream collusion. Everyone wants to scream, this isn't fair, but sooner or later, you have to take responsibility for a system you created for yourself. It's our fault. Now, he said he didn't speak for the players' union, but he was just kind of his own opinion. And there were things in the CBA that, you know, these savvy front offices really taking advantage of and really prioritizing, you know, be it, you know, draft pool money is so important right now in today's game, international pool, you know, those sort of things. And they're content to wait these guys out as long as possible. So it's really fascinating.
Yeah, and we always say, okay, no matter what the CBA says, they're going to ultimately spend like drunken sailors. But this time they didn't. So do you think this market is a byproduct of the system, the thresholds, the draft pools, all of that, the international structure now and all of that? Or is it simply that teams are taking a hard, cold look at what happens to a player when he's 29, 30, 31, versus 24, 25, 26?
Well, you have a few really big market teams making the luxury tax threshold, getting under that threshold and resetting their penalty, a clear priority this particular winter, especially with what's coming next winter with, you know, Bryce Harper and Manny Machado being available in free agency. And so when you have teams like the Dodgers and Yankees right off the bat, you know, trying to cut as opposed to trying to add to their payroll, you know, that's going to impact the market right off the bat. And then on top of that, we obviously have a number of teams trying to follow the formula that, you know, the Astros and the Cubs use to perfection of, you know, years of regression and collecting draft picks and, you know, seeing where that can get you in the long frame of mind. So you have those two things going on. I think you also hit on this too, the aging curve and better knowledge about it. just in general, prioritizing those 0 to 3, you know, pre-arbitration year players. You know, we're seeing more and more of those guys get opportunities, and we're seeing prospects fly through systems faster than we ever have before. So all these things congeal, so to speak, to lead to, you know, the market we have now. So, yeah, it'll be interesting, the long-term ramifications of this and future CBA talks and whatnot. But this is where we're at, and it's obviously not changing. Here we are in February with, I thought we'd have a more active January, quite frankly. I thought that the dam would break a little bit more than it did.
Yeah, we've never seen this. So if you're a player, if you're Scott Boras and Jake Arrieta, do you tell him today, okay, we're going to wait it out? I don't care. I have you valued at X, Y, and Z. The market has you valued at A, B, and C. We're going to wait it out. Somebody will meet you. You meet your price. Or do you say, hey, that's the way the free market works? What would your advice be to your player? And what if you're a player, what are you telling your agent?
Oh, if I'm a player, I'm freaking out, man. And I'm taking the best offer today, whatever it happens to be. But, you know, I think, and I wrote this predictions piece, like February predictions, and who knows where all this all leads. But I thought Arrieta stuck out to me as the kind of guy who might just wait this thing out. And, you know, the confidence factor there, you know, to just know what he is worth and to wait for a situation to develop as they tend to develop in spring training. You know, we all know when guys start throwing pitchers in anger and that sort of thing, you know, things happen, ligaments snap and whatnot. So, Arrieta could be that kind of, you know, that knight in shining armor waiting to swoop in on a situation that needs a savior. So that's one specific guy and one specific circumstance. I think, you know, position players can get ready faster for the regular season. So there is that, but, man, there's just so many bodies out there that I think you have, if you have any sort of reasonable offer, you know, you got to jump on it. But obviously guys' price tags are going to be far different from what they wanted the winner seeking.
Yeah. And I feel bad. Like guys like that, we know Hosmer, we know Moustakas, we know JD Martinez, Arrieta. And I really feel bad for these guys in that, take a guy like Jake. You know, this was a tipping point. What am I saying? This is a seminal point in his career. This is where all the things you work for, this is when you're rewarded for that. And now it may not, so far it hasn't been what he hoped it would be. And you have to recalibrate, you know, everything that you've been thinking. Now, you know, nobody's going to feel sorry for him. I mean, whatever happens, he's going to have enough money to live on comfortably for the rest of his life. But it's just different. And I would think free agency is always a little bit of a gamble. But when the market is colder than you thought it would be, I would think it rattles you a little bit. Would you think that?
Oh, yeah. And yeah, there's guy. I mean, Arrieta is a perfect example of a guy who probably would have had negotiations with the Cubs, you know, a year or two back. Been very different had he known, you know, kind of would have recalibrated his thinking at the time. But, you know, we never know what the market's going to bear. And yeah, a lot of frustration, a lot of disappointment, I'm sure. So it's certainly, I don't know, for people like us, it's been a fascinating winter, I'm sure, for people like them. Fascinating is not the word that they would use. I'm sure there might be some other F word they use in association with this market, but not fascinating.
Yeah. And you know, I've asked Scott Boras a couple of times, like, why don't you go to the Astros and try to get Altuve signed? His contract was ridiculous. And he says the same thing every time. He will be a free agent at 29. He's going to be fine. And I just wonder, does that make you rethink it now? I mean, he's still going to be fine at 29. But maybe not fine in terms of
what we used to think.
7 years. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, where you just say, I'm writing the contract and we'll just see what team signs it. It's not that way now.
No, it's not. All right, well, let's get it. We did have some news and notes on Thursday across MLB. Let's start with one that, for me, Richard, is a long time coming. And it's been a growing trend, of course, is to extend the ballpark netting beyond the minimum recommendations that were set by the commissioner's office at the end of 2015. Now all 30 clubs are going to have their netting to at least the far ends of each dugout by opening day in 2018. So that's great news, in my opinion, long overdue news. We've seen, you know, some of those horrible circumstances, and there was one in New York late last season. And thankfully, it hasn't taken something much more extreme for this news to come, but it's the right thing to do.
Yeah, it's an interesting dynamic in that the players were pushing for it, and all the customer surveys were, please don't do it. And I don't know, like, when Camden Yards opened, I was the parent of young daughters, and I was terrified to go and sit in the lower bowl. I just hated it, and I hate it now, sit in the lower bowl. And I'm telling you, the netting in Houston, and you're the parent of young kids now, young children now, the netting in Houston gave me a security that I never had before. And I don't mind. If I can get seats right behind the dugout, I'm going to take them. Previously, I wouldn't do it because the thought of bats and balls at my young daughters terrified me. And I just tell you to, you know, I know what the customer survey said. People thought this. Well, the best seats in the house are the ones behind home plate, and they're looking through netting. It doesn't impact your enjoyment of the game one bit at all. And I'm thinking, if you're a parent or something, there's a comfort level in it because that's frightening. I mean, you know, and maybe it wasn't frightening in 1985, but since the opening of Camden Yards in 92, the ballparks have gotten smaller, the foul territory has gotten smaller, and like at Fenway, you're closer to the action, and that's a great thing, but that can also be a frightening thing.
Yeah, and the bats play a factor, maybe the balls play a factor. The thing that irritates me is when people say, well, you should be paying attention and get off your phone and that sort of thing, because first of all, it's unrealistic, especially in the year 2018, for people to go 3 hours without looking at their phone. But yeah, the reaction time, even if you are honed in on the game, has to be so extreme. You know, with the way some of these balls fly off the bat and in foul territory, it's just not realistic.
It doesn't matter if the ball's coming off the bat at 105 miles an hour.
Right.
You it doesn't matter whether you're playing Candy Crush or not. You know, your reactions you probably would be fine. My reactions wouldn't be.
I think you're overstating my incredible reaction speed. It's not quite what it was or never will be.
Quick, yeah. Like a cat.
All right. So there were some signings announced this week, Richard, and not major. You know, these are literally minor deals, minor league deals. The first one I want to talk to you about is Miguel Montero. Of course, had a not so pleasant exit from Chicago last year, where, you know, criticized Jake Arrieta for being slow to the plate. And that was impacting his ability to throw out base runners. But the Washington Nationals extend a minor league deal and a spring training invite to Miggy Montero. And that's interesting to me, Richard, just because their catching situation. You know, they have Matt Wieters coming back, and his first year in Washington was a real disappointment, really. He stepped back offensively. Of course, they signed him during spring training, which, you know, again, to get back to our earlier conversation, is probably going to be the new norm now for free agents to sign during spring training. But at the time, that was a late signing, and it just didn't work out particularly great in 2017. He's, of course, back in the fold for 2018 and maybe a bounce-back candidate. But they also have young Pedro Severino behind him. But, you know, it's just kind of been in the air, JT Realmuto being a trade possibility with the Marlins. I don't know if this affects that at all, but it certainly adds a wrinkle to the Nationals' catching plans.
Yeah, he's a left-handed hitter, and I think he's got a career 7.81 OPS against right-handed hitters. You know, he was an All-Star as late as 2014 for the D-backs. He's 34 years old. You don't know, but if you're a catcher looking for work, that's the team you go to, because, as you said, they're probably not real happy with the Wieters-Severino platoon, and that's why they've been associated with JT Realmuto on the waiver wire, on the rumor wire.
And there were a couple other minor league signings in the last couple of days. The Phillies signed Adam Rosales to a minor league deal, and the Cubs signed Peter Borges. And that's an interesting one to me, Richard. Borges is a guy who has provided great defensive value in the past. And, you know, again, how he slots in exactly with the Cubs, if he slots in, if he makes the big league club, certainly remains to be seen. But because they have so much position player depth as it is, but could be an interesting ad.
Yeah, I love him. We both love him in center field. And you can see he's a guy that Joe Maddon could make use of off the bench, base runner, all of that. But when he's standing in center field, there aren't many guys better. And he's a guy that I always wondered what would happen if he didn't get hurt, If you had a team that could just put him out there and let him play, that's never been, he's never been at that position in his career, but he's a guy with gifts, the tools that a manager can use.
And another piece of news from Thursday, Richard, and you know, the other day when we spoke, you were talking about some comeback stories you're looking forward to in 2018. Mark Appel was potentially one of them. Had been removed from the Phillies roster, I believe, but was still at that point, you know, it was assumed he was going to try to make it to the big leagues as a reliever. Well, Bleacher Report had a story with Mark Appel on Thursday that he's hanging them up at 26 years old, at least in the interim. But it's a really interesting story, of course, because it's a former number one overall pick. And it's looking increasingly likely that he'll be the third number one overall pick to not reach the big leagues. You've, of course, were immersed in the Mark Appel story with Houston. You know, what are your thoughts on this decision?
What a painful interview to read. A guy that said, you know, there were times I've been the worst player in professional baseball. And I just, for people that don't know, he's as nice a guy as there is. The Astros almost took him in the number one with the 2012 draft when they took Carlos Correa. In fact, the consensus, I think, on the boards was Mark Appel's the guy to take in 2012. He was drafted a little bit few picks down, but the Pirates didn't sign. And then the Astros did take him with the number one pick in 2013. Houston kid was excited about it, touched 100, never got it, you know. And the Astros did everything they could think of. They finally traded him in the Ken Giles trade. And he's a guy that I followed every start, you know, through the minor leagues, because you're rooting so hard for the guy. He's such a nice person. He's got his degree from Stanford. That's not a bad thing to have. And he said he's just going to – I think he's mentally fried on the game right now. And you know, I would guess he will try to pitch again. You know, it's you don't normally go out on your own terms. Although I don't know when you've been DFA'd, I don't know if it's on your own terms. So it'll be interesting. But I'm telling you, everybody that knows him is rooting for the guy to find whatever his life path is going to be.
Yeah, it was a really interesting interview, and I think it was probably an important interview for young athletes to read, because one point he gets across in it is that he's not letting baseball be his identity. You know, he's not letting it bother him that he'll be labeled an all-time bust or what have you, because, you know, he understands that it's pretty fleeting in baseball to have your identity wrapped up in the sport, and the difficulty of living up to expectations is a really difficult thing. So, I just thought this, he just seems so grounded, and it's obviously a tough moment, but boy, he's approaching it with the right mindset. That's for sure.
As he struggled in the minor leagues with the Astros, there were all these, everyone in the organization had a different theory. Did he feel entitled? I mean, I can tell you he didn't feel entitled. Did he have enough competitive fire? Look, Castro, when you've had the success he had in a great baseball conference like the Pac-12, and you've succeeded in the classroom at a place like Stanford, which tells you about that your time management, your smarts, all those things, you have to be a pretty high achiever to do what he did. It couldn't be that, but for whatever reason, and they measured him, they put every diagnostic tool they had on him. It was like a Ferrari. They were trying to figure out what was wrong. And it just wasn't there. And there were times he made starts. You know, the Astros had debates. Let's just call him up to the big leagues and see what happens. And the minor league managers, of course, argued against that because you're supposed to earn that. But anyway, I love the guy. I truly love the guy. And I hope if this is the next chapter of his life, I hope it's a happy one, because he deserves that.
Yeah, and kind of feeding in that conversation, our colleague Jeffrey Flanagan had a story about Bubba Starling this week. Starling, of course, was a first-round pick of the Royals in 2011. He was a three-sport star from Kansas, and had signed to play quarterback at the University of Nebraska, but he chose to go into baseball. And, you know, here we are, you know, more than 6 years later, and he still hasn't reached the big leagues. But he told Jeffrey Flanagan he thought about hanging him up last year when he was really struggling at Triple A. But he's stuck with it, and he'll be an interesting guy in spring training camp with the Royals this year because of Lorenzo Cain, of course, moving on to Milwaukee, and there's an opening there in the outfield, and Starling will be in that spring training mix trying to compete for a job.
Yeah, and he's only 25 years old, although it seems he's been around forever, 6 years in the minor leagues. And I remember, you know, it was a big deal that the Royals signed him because I think part of him was tugged toward football. And I remember Dayton Moore telling me, hey, and this was before they had arrived. This was before Moustakas and Hosmer and Sal Perez and all those guys had established themselves. They were in the big leagues, but they hadn't established themselves. And he said, this guy's really important to the future of this franchise. You know, a lot of where we go is going to be dictated by how good a player is. That's what they were thinking. They had a guy that is a guy you build a roster around. Hasn't happened yet. They brought him to big league camp, I think, last year, and he'll be in big league camp again. He's, you know, he's one of those Byron Buxton types in that there's skills there, but he just, you know, he's now played 127 games at AAA and hit .223, and he's played 153 games at AA and hit .225. So at some point, you are what you are, and the clock is ticking. But he's hung in there. 6 years is a long time. He's, I think, let's see, 602 minor league games. That's a long time.
Well, you mentioned that there is an opening in the Royals outfield as a result of Lorenzo Cain moving on to Milwaukee. And let's talk about Milwaukee, Richard, because it's been a week now since they shook up the hot stove universe with that gigantic, those two gigantic outfield acquisitions in the single night. And that leads to all kinds of speculation about what's coming next. Are they going to make a trade for an impact starter? There's still the possibility they sign an impact starter. There's a lot of things still up in the air with Milwaukee, but they're being connected to pretty much, you name a pitcher, they're connected to him in some fashion in free agency with Yu Darvish, Jake Arrieta, and in the trade market, Chris Archer, Patrick Corbin, Danny Salazar in Cleveland. It just seems like no stone left unturned there. But what are your thoughts on Milwaukee and what might be next for them?
You know, if you're in, you're all in. And knowing their owner, Mark Attanasio, he's all in. And, you know, I knew a rebuild would be tough for him under, you know, he'd resisted that for a long time, but he trusted David Stearns a lot. They have the pieces to go get it. But what's interesting to me is as they're being connected to all these guys, to Arrieta, to Darvish, to Chris Archer, I mean, you hear people say they may go for two guys. You know, if we're going to put all our cards on the table, because even with everything that's happened now, we may be even with the Cardinals, but we haven't caught the Cubs yet. And they want to finish, you know, they want to finish in front of everybody. Now, I know David Stearns looks at his organization, says, I built a great farm system. We're set up for the next 5 years. We're in a good spot. On the other hand, you know what? Prospects are just prospects. Trade them. If you can get Chris Archer and you can sign Yu Darvish or Arrieta or Alex Cobb, go do it. Go do it. And then you're gonna draw 3 million fans. You're gonna create a monster of a race in the National League Central. And oh, by the way, it'll be good for Greg Holland because at that point, I'm pretty sure the Redbirds are gonna go back and take another look at their bullpen and maybe third base too.
Yeah, the ante keeps being raised there in the NL Central, it's become for me maybe the most. We had our ranking the divisions a couple weeks back, Richard. We might have to reinvestigate that deeper into spring training. The NL Central is definitely rising in prestige and just intrigue with all the back and forth. But we had another bit of news, another bad bit of news with the loss of Oscar Gamble this week. He was 68 years old. He died of a rare tumor of the jaw. And Oscar Gamble, of course, known for the incredible afro poking out of the baseball cap, but also had a really solid career as well. 200 home runs over 17 seasons. And Richard, I understand you've got a story about Oscar Gamble. Let's hear your Oscar Gamble story.
Well, the bigger story, the bigger message of Oscar Gamble is judge people on what you know of them, not what people say about them. When the Rangers traded for him after the 78 season from the Padres, it was your friend, Mike Hargrove, went to the Padres in that deal. You heard the same thing. It's a bad guy, you know, and you stereotypical the guy. Look at that afro. He's Stokely Carmichael. Don't trust this guy. He's a loudmouth. I'm telling you, Castro, this is one of the nicest, funniest people I have ever been around in my life. When he walked in that door every day, you knew he was there and he made people laugh and everyone loved him. Now, he was came to the Rangers at a time when, let's just say, it wasn't the most well-run franchise in the game. So on July 30th, July 28th, this was after the trade deadline, I'm pretty sure at that time, he was traded back to the Yankees. The Rangers had a deal to trade for Mickey Rivers, and Oscar was not in the trade. Oscar was leading the American League with a .335 batting average, and Brad Corbett, the owner of the team, comes into the press box that the night before or something. He appears to have had a cocktail or two. He's got cigar ashes going down his tie, and he tells the beat writers, "You guys are going to kill me for what I just did." And he's sloshing his drink, and he walks, he leaves. And I went, he's just kidding. And they all went running after him. No, he did something. So the next day we know they have now traded a player that hasn't cleared waivers. And the Yankees are going to get to pick who they want to take. And before the game of July 30th, Oscar, I'll remember this for the rest of my life. He has put all the players' names in a hat and is going around the clubhouse going, take a name out of the hat and find out if you're going to be traded to the Yankees. He's going around, we're going to find out who's going to be traded to the Yankees. We go upstairs. The game's about to start. 5 minutes before the game, it's Oscar Gamble's been removed from the lineup. And this was another era.
Yeah.
One of the beat guys, I think it was Randy Galloway, calls the clubhouse and says, hey, let me speak to Oscar Gamble. And can you imagine doing that now? Right. Oscar goes, hello? And he goes, well, what's going on? Why are you out of the lineup? I'm the one that was named later. The Yankees took me. This was his second tour. He'd been traded from the Yankees after they signed Reggie Jackson. And I'm telling you, a light was gone out of that clubhouse because he made everybody laugh. And you've heard that from Buddy Bell, from Goose Gossage, everybody that knew the guy. He's a guy that seemed to love his life, and it was pretty good. And I would have liked to have been there the day when the Yankees ordered that afro shaved off, because I heard it wasn't the greatest day of Oscar's life.
No, I hear they butchered him pretty much. It wasn't even a good cut.
Yeah, Gossage said, it looks good, Oscar. And he's going, oh, my God, they killed him. But anyway, the larger message was this was a really good guy, a really funny guy, a people person. You know, I don't know what he wanted to do with his post-baseball life, but I could have seen he would have been a great instructor, a manager, whatever he wanted to do, because he just, when you were around him, he made you laugh and you wanted to please him. And those are two things that good coaches and good managers and executives have.
Yeah, tough week in the baseball community because, of course, Kevin Towers was cut from that cloth as well, you know, making you laugh. He's just a guy you like to be around. So really tough week. So our condolences to, families of both men losing two good men this week. All right, Richard, let's look ahead to the 2018 season. You have written on some dark horse MVP candidates. Never too early to start picking some MVP candidates. So hit me with a couple guys. Let's start with let's start in Minnesota. That's a frisky team that got to the wild card last year. You've got a dark horse MVP coming out of Minnesota.
Yeah, the way I looked at it is anybody can pick Mike Trout, John Carlos Stanton, Aaron Judge. Hey, that's easy. George Springer, Francisco Lindor. Hey, anyone can pick those guys. But so what my editor, our editor, Matt Myers, and I came up with, pick some dark horse candidates. And I start with Byron Buxton. He's a guy that finally he became the guy we thought he was going to be in the second half of the season. He's a guy truly with five tools. So I don't know about the power, certainly four. He. When you watch him play, he blows you away. And the Twins are an up-and-coming team. You could see that. You could see him just taking off, you know, and being a guy that we have to take a look when you fill out your MVP ballot, a guy you have to take a look at.
Yeah, you know, Twins are going to be fascinating, and they're a team that could still make a lot of noise here between now and opening day because they're certainly in aggressive pursuit of starting pitching help and improving that rotation. But Buxton was worth five wins above replacement last year, Richard. So that was a really, really strong showing from a guy who, you know, had begun to have a lot of questions about going into 2017 just because he hadn't put it all together yet. And he was only 23 years old, so it wasn't really fair. But, you know, he kept getting bounced back and forth between the big leagues and minor leagues. So you just didn't know if he'd ever, catch fire. And he really did in the second half. And the defensive value alone makes him just one of the more compelling figures in the game right now. So, all right. And you got,
and for people that haven't seen him play, you just go to a game, go to a spring training game, you will know which one he is. He doesn't need his name on his, because he does things in center field and on the bases that you go, whoa, he's pretty good.
Another guy on your list who took some time to blossom, and this was more about he just kept getting hurt in the minor leagues. And so he breaks out late in baseball terms. But Tommy Pham last year was tremendous in St. Louis. You've got him as a dark horse MVP candidate for 2018. Why is that?
Yeah, and I think the Cardinals are I don't know if they're a dark horse team anymore, but Tommy Pham, you know, they went through all the machinations with Grichuk and Piscotty and all those guys. He earned the right to play. He played a great center field. He was 11th in the MVP voting last year. You know, they players mature. It clicks at different times. Tommy Pham has just turned is about to turn 30 years old, and he's earned the right to play center field. And part of the reasons the Cardinals are excited about this season is, you know, it's not just Marcell Ozuna, it's not just shoring up the bullpen and having a healthy Adam Wainwright and all that. It's that now you get Paul DeJong. They figured it out at shortstop with this guy, and it's Tommy Pham playing center field, and Colton Wong has come of age too. And he's a guy that is so good. You know, 931 OPS last year, 23 homers, 25 steals. That tells you it's the whole deal. He plays great in center field. And, you know, the Cardinals are a high-profile team. And if they get rolling, people are going to be paying attention to him. You know, there would be an inclination to say, okay, it's Ozuna because he's what's new. But really, from opening day a year ago, Tommy Pham and Paul DeJong and Ozuna are all new. The Cardinals have been retooled in a year.
Let's talk about a guy nobody is talking about from a team nobody is talking about, and that's Matt Olson, who went crazy late last year, Richard. He had 24 home runs in a 59-game sample with the A's, ended up finishing fourth in the rookie year voting just on the basis of those 59 games. But obviously, you know, it didn't get a whole lot of attention because the A's were you know, it was a lost season when Olson arrived and started doing what he was doing. But, you know, it's kind of an interesting ball club as you look ahead to 2018. We talked about the Brandon Moss trade the other day, Ryan Buchter being a piece they added in that trade as well. And we talked about it in terms of what it meant for the Royals and saving some salary. But the A's are looking, you know, maybe a little frisky out there in the AL West, maybe a little overlooked. And Olson's a big part of their offensive profile.
Yeah, their corner infielders, Matt Olson and Matt Chapman. I mean, they played, I think, like the last 2 months, they were right at 500, maybe one game under 500. And by the time I saw them in September or whenever it was, I mean, there was a spring in Bob Melvin's step. I mean, he felt like, you know how it is when you're around young guys, they sort of get you going and you feel like you feel good. You certainly start to see a light at the end of the tunnel. And Matt Olson was a monster. I mean, he was hard to get out, and Matt Chapman was pretty good too. So going forward, they look at it and say, okay, now we've expected so much out of Graveman and Manaea and Cotton. We need A.J. Puck to come up and be the guy we think he's going to be. If we can just get a little starting pitching with Chris Davis back and with adding Piscotty, we've got a chance. Maybe we're not going to run down the Astros and Angels, but we've got a chance to go have some fun. And that, you know what? And that's good. That's good for everybody. When a team from like the A's, because it's fun to watch young guys win for the first time, they're so fired up about it, and we'll be happy for Bob Melvin too.
Absolutely. Well, you can read Richard's full list on MLB.com today. Dark horse MVP candidates. And Richard, before I let you go, I want to hit you on one more thing there in the great city of Houston. A major event this week, and that is the opening of Hunter Pence's restaurant, where, if I'm not mistaken, you can play some board games, you can have some craft beer. Is that where you're headed this evening? Are you going to go play some Dungeons and Dragons and have a local brew? Is that what's on your game plan for tonight?
Well, the invitations are out. The opening is tomorrow. It's a gaming cafe. You know, it made me think of you. Craft coffee, craft beer. Want to read a comic book? Want to play games? Opening tomorrow, our colleague Allison Footer will be there. Apparently my invitation got, I don't know, lost in the mail. I might just show up and just say, hey, get Hunter over here. I'm sure he wanted me to be here. But it's an interesting concept. I don't know that I've ever heard of it before. Have you? Had you ever heard of a gaming cafe?
You know, we have something in Cleveland where I know you can go and play games and drink. But this is different because this is open from 7 a.m. to midnight. The name of the place, by the way, is Coral Sword. If you're in the area, 1318 Telephone Road opens on Friday. Open from 7 a.m. to midnight. So you can get your game on all day and all night, Richard. I know you're going to be a regular.
Yeah. And by the way, there's food. So come over to Hunter and say hello to Hunter when you're there.
All right. Good stuff as always from Richard Justice. We'll continue to wait for some news to drop here in the month of February. We have made it, folks. We have made it to February. Spring training is right around the corner. And, you know, maybe some guys will have jobs by the time spring training starts. If they do, we'll be all over it here on the Morning Lineup podcast. Thanks for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time.